Welcome everyone to episode 10 of the podcast. I can't believe we're on episode 10.
It's mad,
isn't it? I'm joined by a very special guest today. Caitlin, who is the operations manager.
Hello.
We'll find out a little bit more about you and about the building today. But before we do, we'll start as always, which is with the tea that we're drinking. So yes. Caitlin, you've chosen the tea today. What have you picked?
This is my favourite tea, so it's a Scottish chai. It's nice in the winter because it kind of warms you up, but it's quite a dreek day today, so it's nice and spicy.
It is, it's lovely, and it's popular as well, isn't it? Quite popular.
Yeah, I like mine best with milk. If you ask the guys downstairs, they say no milk, but I break the rules.
As you can, if you're the operations manager, I think. Lovely. So I thought what we'd do this month, what we'd talk about is a day in the life of the tea room, because we, you know, often Isabella and I talk about the history of the tea rooms, the features of the tea rooms, but I wanted to give people an idea of actually what it's like to come and what you could do here and just the atmosphere and things like that, really. So that's why I thought you would be a good person to have on the show.
It's nice to do it as well, because it takes me out of my usual task. It's nice to do this.
That's right. So do you want to tell the listeners where we are today? Because they can probably guess from the noise, but...
We're in the mezzanine, or the gallery area, of the main tea room, so you'll probably hear a lot of noise downstairs, but that's because the tea rooms is nice and busy today. We're starting to get busier as we come in the summer season, so...
Yeah. That's right, yeah. It's beautiful up here, really. It's really nice up here.
I love it, and it's not super bright and sunny outside today, so it's quite a nice temperature. It can get quite warm in the gallery during the summer, can't it?
It can get very, very... I'm very glad that I'm not wearing the waistcoat and the tie and the stuff that the staff wear here, definitely. So we know you're called Caitlin.
Yes.
You're also a Glaswegian, born and bred, aren't you?
Yeah.
So I wanted you to maybe... Could you tell people, like, your three favourite things about being in Glasgow or being a Glaswegian? Or have you got some recommendations for people come to visit Glasgow?
Yeah, I mean, Glasgow is such a friendly city. When you don't visit on an old firm day, it's probably one of the nicest places to be. I just love the people. I think that's the biggest thing for me. It feels like it's full of culture and fun. And when you get Glasgow on a sunny day, I think it's one of the most beautiful places. I mean, the architecture alone is just so nice. Like, I remember, I think it was my gran that always said to me, like, always look up when you walk through Glasgow city centre. And that's what I do all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And have you got some things that you'd recommend people go and see in Glasgow? Or eat, or, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many lovely restaurants in Glasgow. Apart from when you're having afternoon tea here, one of my favourite restaurants is Kapow, which is part of Oxenfinch. They do some really nice kind of vegetarian, vegan food options. But just in terms of, like, music and culture, visit Ashton Lane. Listen to some of the buskers that you see down Ashton Lane. Go for a right good pint somewhere.
That's right. I mean, it segues quite nicely into a question I was going to ask you later about what, you know, things that you do in your daily life here. But we get buskers, don't we?
We do. Sometimes not the best ones. We haven't been known to bribe some buskers with some cake, which seems to work actually. It's a win-win. They're quiet for a wee hour, and then they get some cake.
Remember when I bribed the workman who had the digger outside because we had some function in? So I've got some questions that I wanted to ask you, if that's all right, just to help us paint a picture of a day
Sounds
in the
lovely.
Life. So we've been open since 2018.
Yeah. It's been that long.
After 4 years of restoration.
Yes.
Can you, if you dare, cast your mind back to opening day? What was it like, opening day here?
Opening day. So when I joined Macintosh at Willow, I was the events manager. So a slight change in job role to now, but it was chaotic, fun, really fun. There was an absolute buzz about the whole day. But I think because there'd been such a long planning time and such a long process to get us to opening day, it was just so nice to see people come through the building again. I mean, we were still setting up our till system. Like, we'd already taken orders and we were still setting up the till system. But I think that's part of the fun and the buzz, isn't it? It's when you're kind of, you think it's not going to go well, but then you get through it and actually it's amazing. So, it was, I remember moving tables and chairs up the stairs in our wee high heels. I'll never forget that.
That's right, because every single piece of furniture is handmade, so you have to be careful with them, don't you? And it's, what, five floors, actually? Or the whole
building? That's the thing, when we first opened, that the absolute fear of, like, dropping a chair or dropping the bits of glass that go on top of the tables was just terrifying. But we got through it, and it's nice because now we're back open since the pandemic. You kind of, you've got that buzz back.
And then there was the sort of official opening with special guests. Do you want to say a wee bit about that?
So that was September. Mm-hmm. So we had Prince Charles and Camilla come and do the official opening. We had worked with the Prince's Trust, so a lot of our team had originally come from one of the programmes that the Prince's Trust did. So as part of that, Prince Charles came and did the official opening because he obviously has such a big connection with the Prince's Trust Foundation. So that was really exciting, really fun. A lot of planning went into that from the Trust perspective. And we all got a nice wee something to eat, and Charles had a wee cup of tea, and then we had the official opening in. So that's when the exhibition opened for the first time. The rest of the building, apart from the second floor, which is where our event spaces are, hadn't officially opened, so that was like part of the whole building reopening.
I was outside with a class of 7-year-olds
waving some salt tires,
waving some flags and stuff. It was nice. Yeah, I think it's fair to say that, like, Glasgow was happy that we were open, and people gathered outside and excited, weren't they?
He did ask me whether I washed the dishes, and I explained to him what the dumb waiters were, but it was a very, very bizarre conversation.
There you go. You've peaked. You've explained to Prince Charles what a dumb waiter is.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. Amazing. Lovely. So that was obviously a special day, or a couple of special days. Could you maybe describe for everyone, like, what an average day is, starting from, 8 a.m, Willie, the maintenance man, arriving? Yeah. So how does the whole day go, especially if you've got, like, an event in the evening as well?
So the best thing about my job is that every day is different, but there are some things we'll do as a standard. So usually Willie comes in, maintenance officer, and he'll open all the building up, make sure that everything is all good, there's no leaks. Historic building, that you make sure that there's no problems. We've had our fair share of floods, but thankfully, touch wood, not had one in a while. So so Willie will open up the building. Usually then I come in, Willie comes in about 7, and the cleaner Pauline starts. So she's a huge Macintosh fan, so she loves looking after the building. And it's so lovely when our team love Macintosh and love the building as well, because it kind of just makes it more special for them to come in and start their day. So I come in usually anywhere between like 8 and half 8, and my first point of call is usually to visit the kitchen to make sure that they're all good and they're all set up for the day. And then I'll do like a little walk around of the building, just make sure that we're all set for the day, make sure everything's nice and tidy and there's no kind of boring hazards. None of our fire escapes are blocked, so that's that's always a fun task. And then we'll check to see what we've got on, check to see if we've got any events on, and then I'll do a little touch base with the rest of the HODs and make sure that everyone's set. If there's any staffing issues, we like to kind of deal with them at the start of the day, and then we just kind of fire into service. And when I have the chance, I'll have a look at my emails.
Yeah, because I say this too, when we have young people come visit, vocational students coming to, who are thinking about having a career in hospitality or something, that it's a very unusual business, because it's like four businesses under one roof, isn't it, really?
And I think that's the beauty of it, is that it's so different on a day-to-day. So like, you could have one day where it's really tea rooms heavy and there's loads of groups and stuff in the tea rooms, but then the next day it might be that all the event spaces are full, and it's nice to get that balance, because then it's never the same, it's always different. And I think that's part of the reason why so many of our team have been with us for so long, because it's not monotonous. There's always something new to learn, always something different to see, and I think that's what makes it so nice to work in.
Yeah, I mean, I like it when we have those days where I might have like a group of 4-year-olds wandering around holding cushions so that they can sit on the chairs, but there'll be some, I don't know what corporate people do, bankers or something, up in the events room, and they'll come down to have their lunch.
Well, I think that's the best thing about it, because heritage is accessible for everyone, and that's the way it should be. So like, it doesn't really matter if you're hiding in one of the corporate spaces, you learn about Macintosh, whether you like it or not, because it's woven throughout the whole building. So whether it's just you looking at that funky map in the boardroom, the 1901 map in the boardroom, or like actually visiting the exhibition, kind of it just forces you to learn when you don't even know you're learning, and that's the beauty of it. Obviously the pandemic has been a long slog, but it feels like, I mean, as soon as we had our first group of kind of American visitors, we were like, that's it, that's us heading towards a good summer. So one of my favourite things about in here is this whole idea of it being like a living, breathing museum, because some of my favourite visits to other visitor attractions have been ones where you can get really involved in. I mean, I remember going to Killeen Castle when I was little, and like you have to find these little, they're like little kind of sculptures of people. I don't know, they're little, and they're hidden throughout the castle. And you have a sheet, you have to go hunt for them. And I went back last summer of one of my kind of my staycations, and they'd all changed to Lego people.
Great.
But because I'm not a child anymore, I wasn't given a sheet, and I was like really disappointed.
You know what you should do?
But I was brazen. I just went and asked
did
for
you
one.
Good, because that's what I did when I went to the Escher Museum in The Hague in the Netherlands, which I would thoroughly recommend. Uh-huh. I said, have you got the sheet for the kids? And they said, yeah, here you go.
Well, the thing is when I asked, I was with my nephew who is like three. But then I was with my partner and my sister and my brother-in-law, and we were just the whole day just spent hunting for these little Lego men. And actually, the three-year-old was getting in the way. I was like, you're holding me up. Like, I've got...
This is why Caitlin doesn't work in the education department. Yeah. super duper. Right, so what did I want to ask you? Oh, yeah. So, I mean, afternoon tea. It's afternoon. You know, we're famous for afternoon teas. And we've got a lovely Japanese-inspired afternoon tea moment. So, can you please explain for listeners who might not know, and it can be confusing, what is the difference between afternoon tea, high tea, low tea, cream tea? Do you know?
Jody,
I can help you out because I've researched.
You're hitting me with some difficult questions here. Cream tea is just scones and...
Get that easy one out of the way, right?
And a pot of tea. We don't actually... I mean, you can make your own cream tea up here. Because afternoon tea is the kind of most popular one, that's what we serve. High tea, kind of more dinner vibes. Later on in the day, we stop at afternoon tea at 4 o'clock, which is still a little bit later. But I think because of what you get and what's involved in it, it's quite a good time to stop it. What else? What were the other ones?
So afternoon tea, sometimes called low tea.
Low tea.
But high tea to me is just tea. Like, what do you call tea? Or do you say tea or dinner? What do you say?
Oh, right, like tea or dinner.
You say dinner.
Yeah. Tea, I never really grew up with having tea. I think it feels like quite an English thing. Or maybe like a kind of like Scottish middle class. I grew up. I grew up with dinner.
Let's just, as long as none of us say supper.
Supper.
So this is what I've got written down. High tea, the middle and lower classes, which would be us guys, would have substantial high tea later in the day, 5 or 6 o'clock, in place of a late dinner. Because in the olden days, we'd be farmers, right? So we'd be going to bed quite early. So it's your like last meal of the day. But we would have also got up really early. Whereas if you were an aristocrat with nothing to do, you could stay up as long as you like.
Well, my mum did a bit of farm work when she was a little girl. They lived on they had a lot of land, and they had like sheep, dogs, and things like that. And she used to say that they used to make porridge, really really thick porridge, and then they used to let it chill, and they used to cut it up into slices. And when she went off, and that's what she used to eat. And I think she tried to give me it once, like, and I was like, "What are you doing? I do not want that."
So do you know anything about the history of afternoon tea? And if not, I can tell you about it.
A little bit.
What do you know? What do you know?
They used to take afternoon tea in the afternoon.
That's very,
the
very
Queen
good.
Is apparently has afternoon tea every day. No, tell me more. Tell me more.
So, allegedly, apparently, afternoon tea was sort of invented, although I don't know if it's really, by the Duchess of Bedford in the 1840s. Mm. And I've got here, so at the time, people would have two meals a day.
Yes.
There was no lunch, right? And then dinner just started to get later and later, like 8 o'clock at night. And so apparently this Duchess got quite peckish. Mm-hmm. And so she just asked, one day she asked her kitchen to send up something to eat, like sandwiches or something. and she'd do that about 4 o'clock, and so she'd share it with her friends in the parlour, and then they'd go for a walk. So it used to be attached to then going for a promenade afterwards.
Yeah.
And then when she went back to London, because as you know, having watched Bridgerton,
I love it.
We all now understand the how the season works, that you're at the ton or you're out in the countryside waiting for the season to begin.
I wouldn't mind going back and just experiencing that for myself, to be honest.
So the Duchess brought back this thing that she'd started to do in the countryside back to London, and it just really caught on, and then all the ladies would do it. And it's low tea rather than high tea, because the high teas, the working class hot dinners at night, you'd eat at the table, which is quite high. But low tea, afternoon tea, you would sit in your comfy chaise longues with on the low table. So that's why we get high tea. But I didn't know this about afternoon teas, which I discovered very recently, that scones are quite a modern addition. So the Duchess of Bedford probably wouldn't have scones.
What would they have had instead?
I don't know, really. Some sort of other cake, but a scone is quite a modern... they must have had them before the 20th century, but it didn't really make its way onto the afternoon tea stand until the 20th century, apparently.
And would they have been little ones or big ones, do you think?
I don't know. I don't know, really. But I do know that the word scone, I had a look at the etymology. Again, it's a bit ambiguity about what it means, but it may derive from Scots Gaelic, so it's nice that Scotland can take claim for it. The Scots Gaelic term scone, S-G-O-N-N, scone, skin.
Skun,
meaning a shapeless mass.
Shapeless mass.
Or a mouthful. So good old Scots Gaelic has always been super descriptive.
Mass.
Just a lump. What should we call this?
I don't think that I'll be adding that one to the menu.
I think we should.
Enjoy your shapeless mass.
I mean, because we do, we're inspired every so often with themes. We've got Japanese now, perhaps we could have, literal.
I actually think. The Japanese inspired afternoon tea is one of my favourites.
It's really good.
In terms of taste, I just think it tastes lovely. And it looks beautiful.
Beautiful. And it's so nice to be able to draw from what's around you, right? Because this building's inspired by Japan.
Exactly. And I think that's one of my favourite things about doing the themed afternoon teas is that you think about the team in the kitchen. Like making the same thing every single day when you sell so many of them as well, it'll get so monotonous and so boring. So it's nice to get, and the kitchen team, like, it's not like I don't decide what the menus are. I just have a general premise about what I think will fit and what's on brand, and then the kitchen team will, as a team, pull the menu together. And I think it's nice for them to kind of get their creativity out and see it come to life from like this little idea on a bit of paper, and then see it come to life, and I get quite protective over it.
Talking about afternoon tea then, I would like to know, what is your dream afternoon tea stand? So we'll have a sandwich plate, obviously, scones, and then cakes at the top. I've had a go at this as well. So sandwiches,
I'm quite a classic flavour kind of gal.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would do, I don't think you can beat a cucumber and cream cheese.
I definitely disagree with that, but yeah.
I love it. I love a cucumber cream cheese. And then I think a chicken teacup. I love a chicken. It's going to be very mismatched, but they're
It's your dream stand.
Hummus, maybe like a hummus and pita
rather
than a classic sandwich.
Mm.
And then I think I would round it off with a sushi roll from the afternoon tea that's on the now. Because I feel like that's an elite selection of sandwiches. And I eat sushi all the time in the office. It's like my staple.
Yeah.
So I couldn't not have an afternoon tea without it on it.
Whereas I don't eat sushi. Not to put you off. Because I used to have this job teaching at a Japanese summer school in Dumfries. You can ask me about it sometime. Imagine how weird that job was. And all the students were horrified that we had sushi in supermarkets, barely refrigerated.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they all ate their meat, because we used to have barbecues all the time, really, really raw. And I was horrified, because I was like, you've not cooked that.
I retract my chicken tikka statement.
It'll be fine. It's cooked differently. Your sandwiches are very different from mine.
Yeah,
I've gone for smooth peanut butter.
Because peanut butter sandwich. See, I'm a crunchy peanut butter.
I love peanut butter and smoked salmon, but not together.
Together. That'd be a strange combo.
That would be great, wouldn't it? So they'd be my sandwiches. Right, scones. What kind of scones would you have?
I like an apple and cinnamon scone.
Oh, yeah.
And then just a fruit scone.
Yeah.
I feel like if you're going to eat a scone, put something in it.
Yeah.
But people can get quite, phase in.
Yes.
he only eats plain scones.
Yeah.
And he's adamant that he will not have a scone with any sort of thing.
I mean, you guys have been together a long time and you've got over the whole Celtic Rangers thing. Yeah. One of you supports Celtic and one of you supports Rangers, so
it's the scone versus the plain scone there.
That's the straw that will break the camel. I'm going to go with cheese. I like it like a hard cheese, like a red Leicester or something, you know, like. And so finally we've got to the cakes, the top tier, which is the cakes. Do you want to hear what I've got first of all?
Go for it.
Carrot cake, absolute classic.
Staple.
The carrot cake here is amazing.
So
nice. Carrot cake.
So good.
I'm going to go with a bit of lemon drizzle, or even lemon and lime drizzle.
I've heard only about a little your lemon bit. Drizzle.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
And then I've gone for banoffee pie, which is my favourite dessert. And
lovely.
Down here, we don't just have cakes. We have daily cakes
daily
that
cakes,
have got things on
them. I mean, we had a lemon meringue pie on the other day, which sold so well. It looked amazing.
Yeah. And then my final one, a bit out of left field, is something Turkish delighty, because I do like Turkish delight.
I'm not a fan of Turkish delight. I think that's like Marmite, though. You love it, you hate it, because I'm not a Turkish delight fan.
So that's my stand complete. What are you going to finish your stand off?
I am finishing off with a little apple pie, quick classic, a Battenberg, because I really feel like you can't go wrong with Battenberg. Try to bake well. And then I think I would go with the current cake that's on the Japanese inspired apple tea, the little cherry blossom one.
What do you think that if you came back in like 10 years, what do you think it'd be like? Or if you're still here in 10 years, or what would you like it to be like in 10 years, optimistically?
I think, I mean, ideally it would have expanded. I mean, because of the type of business we are and the type of kind of business we want to be, I would like to have acquired Sainsbury's next door that's no longer Sainsbury's, have a nice cooking school,
yes,
have like a like your own little on-site bakery,
yeah, just like Miss Cranston, she used to, you know, bake stuff,
nice and busy, all the areas used.
So you're thinking about the dugout, which is the only area of the historic building
I mean,
we don't
I would
have
love the dugout to be like a little little speakeasy type bar.
Yeah, so this was a gentleman's space
that
we don't have anymore. It was destroyed in the 20s. If Caitlin turned it into a speakeasy, that would be slightly historically inaccurate, as we are a temperance based, or we were a temperance based.
But yeah, but you can drink in here now.
Adaptation.
Go
exactly.
The times, you know.
Exactly. Perhaps, and but not a leery.
From a business perspective, you need to make your money somewhere.
Very true. I think it would be cool.
Yeah, just like a little bar, like a little bar with some like live music, some nice cocktails. Think big, why not?
Yeah.
I think that would be lovely. I think kind of expansion and for it just for anyone to know it's here. Like I want it to be on the map, kind of worldwide. I mean, it is much better known now in terms of, you know, we've done quite a lot of work in terms of marketing things to get it to that point, but it would be lovely. I think it should be really protected. I think it's an absolute gem and that it should be kept forever. So hopefully still standing.
Yeah. And I think that'll happen. I do. Well, I hope that it'll happen, but like you say, it's getting really busy.
Yeah.
And I think I can't speak for everyone who visits, but it does seem to be the case that when people come once, they come back and they tell their friends, you know, people who've come in and gone, this was recommended to me.
I think that's the beauty of it. And I think because the team are so passionate about the place, that like feeds through in terms of like service.
So I guess this is my last question, really. Like, do you have any funny stories or events, funny moments in the tea room that you could share that are suitable?
Funny moments.
What's happened? I'll have a think as well. So I'll kick us off. It's not really my story, but before we did the restoration, it used to be a jeweller's, didn't it?
Yeah.
It used to be a famous Glasgow jeweller's called Henderson's the Jewellers. And I do remember some man called the office, didn't they? One morning. Obviously, people call the office generally to book a table or an event, education. This man booked because he wanted someone to fix his Tiffany lamp for him. And I remember it took Isabella, who was talking to him, quite a while to explain that we don't do that. And I think, didn't you say something like, but I've seen a sign in your window that says you do?
Somebody else thought phone about a Tiffany lamp.
Yeah, so in that transition phase, we got some requests for repairs. Yeah. So what have you got for us? Anything else?
Oh, funny stories. I don't think I have any funny. I mean, I've got some mad stories, yeah, but probably not appropriate for public knowledge. But I mean, we did used to have bells on the table, and all the tables. It is very kind of historically accurate. We took them off because of COVID, but they'll be making a reappearance on the tables very shortly. But they used to have the, you could ring them like actual bells. And if you think about, like, you can hear how noisy it is at the moment. So you think about a full gallery, full tea rooms, and then you've got like 9-10 people ringing the bells for attention. Not only did it make you feel quite awkward that people were ringing the bells to get somebody to come over to see them, but you couldn't work out where the sound was coming from.
It was just bells.
Somebody in the mezzanine could be ringing the bell, and I'd be going to the front door thinking somebody at the front was ringing the bell. So you just end up your whole shift chasing the noise of bells. And at one point, we just had enough, so I went round, me and one of the girls who worked in here, and we took all the inserts out the bells. So now, when people try and ring them, there's no insert in them, and I think they're a bit confused.
They're merely decorative, is what I say.
So they only work in the salon, which is quite fitting. But we play a game when we do our visits, don't we? And we wait to see how long it takes for somebody to ring the bell.
Sometimes it's like 10 seconds, and then the bells are being rung.
But that would be me. If I was on a trip, I'd be the first person to ring the bell, because I've got no, like, I can't stop myself. Yeah. Once I've thought about it, I need to do it.
Yeah, fair enough. It's harmless, isn't it? But yeah, that's lovely. Right, so thanks very much, Caitlin. That's pretty much to our time. Anything else that you want to say or add or anything about day in the life, about the building?
Thank you for asking me to be on the podcast. That's been really nice. Before this, I was looking at ladder registries and compliance. So this was a really welcome.
Well, when we cover ladders later in the season,
a ladder podcast coming to you soon.
Yeah, that would be lovely. All right, well, thank you very much, everyone, for listening to our episode. You can always come visit, of course. We're open every single day. Lots of things to do in the building, as you know. And we will see you, but not see you next month, because it is a podcast, so we never see you. But that's it. Please take care of yourselves. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.